and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osman, here with my friend and chavruta, Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masachah Bava Metzia, daf Mem Vav, page 46. The Gemara is continuing its discussion about chalifin, right? Whether or not you can use an object as an exchange as opposed to a sale, and specifically the issue of using a coin, right? That you would basically say that in order to show that you're making a kinyan on an item, normally we would say that you have to either lift the item up, draw the item near you, things like that. But there is a possibility of doing it where you exchange another item for the actual item that you're making in place of the item that you're making a kinyan on. And the question is, can you do that with a coin? Because it looks like you're doing a sale as opposed to an exchange, which is what the chalifim would be. And so on yesterday's daf, we saw a machloka between Rav and Levi about whether or not a coin is valid for that. And now the Gemara is going to list a whole bunch of Amoraim who hold that it's not a valid way of making chalifin. You can't use a coin. V'chein amar Ula, right? So did Ula say, Eid ma be'a nase chalifin. A coin cannot be used for chalifin. V'chein amar Rabbi Asi. Rav Asi also said that Eid mitba nase chalifin. A coin cannot be used for chalifin. V'chein amar Rabba bar Barchana amar Rabbi Yochanan. Also Rabba bar Barchana said this in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Eid ma be'a nase chalifin. So they're basically trying to show here, they were going back and forth, trying to prove both sides of this. But here they're giving us a bunch of Amoraim who say you can't use a coin. So now the Gemara though wants to basically present as a question, can we really say that a coin can't be used? Itve Rabbi Abba Ula. So Rabbi Abba actually challenged Ula, who we said held this, right? We just said this, and uses the following brisa to challenge it.
If somebody's donkey drivers and workers were asking him for their wages or, you know, the food that they were entitled to in the marketplace,
and then he says to the money changer in the marketplace,
right, give me a dinar's worth of basically some of copper coins so that I can provide them to their needs. So he doesn't have the money with him. So he goes to the money changer and he says, you give me a bunch of these coins that I'm going to need and distribute them to the donkey drivers and the workers. And then I'm going to bring you a good dinar.
That's how the Gemara, they'll explain what this means a little bit later. And a tree seat, right? So a tree seat was some type of small coin. Rashi explains that maybe it was worth 3 isarin, which is basically an eighth of a dinar. But the idea is that he's basically saying, I'm going to bring you the money later. Im yesh la ma'ot mutar, if he has those coins at home, then he can make this type of arrangement basically with the money changer. V'im lav asur. And if he doesn't have the coins actually at home, then he's not allowed, then he can't make this type of exchange where he's basically going to take the copper coins from the money changer, right, without having this dinar, because it is because if he basically takes a dinar's worth of coins, right, in copper, and then he gives him back a dinar and a tresis, it actually looks like there's interest, okay? But if he does have the coins at home, then he is allowed to do it because then it's not a loan, right? Rather, what's happening is the money changer is basically giving this person the dinar of copper coins as a chalifin, right, as an exchange for a dinar and a tresis that he has at home. So that's basically what they're saying, that this is what this brisa is saying. And if you say that a coin cannot be used for chalifin, then even if this employer does have these promised coins at home, right, then this would just be a case of a loan and it should be forbidden because of this issue about interest. So it shows that basically you can do chalifin with a coin according to this brisa.
So very interestingly, it says Ishtik, right? Ula was basically silent. He couldn't answer Rabbi Abba. But then Rabbi Abba comes and he gives an answer so that Ula can still hold his position that you can't use a coin for chalifin. Amar le, so Rabbi Abba says to Ula, Dilma idi v'idi beportitut shanu deleka aluchot tiva. Maybe the Brisa is talking about a case where the coins that the money changer and of the person who needs the coin, the employer, I guess, are copper discs that do not have a stamp on them. So in other words, the person isn't asking the money changer, is asking the money changer basically for a dinar's worth of unminted coins, right? Just these like copper discs, and it's the metallic, you know, and which have metallic content, right? But they're less valuable because they're not actually currency. And in exchange for having them, the employer basically says, I'll bring a dinar, right? But it's not actually, it's not a real coin. It's not actual currency. V'idi, v'idi, perahave. And thus, these are actually considered to be produce, which we are allowed to do chalifin with. Umishum, achi, niknuka chalifin. And therefore, they can be acquired through chalifin. So Ula likes what Rabbi Abba says. Amarle, right? He says, in, yes. Deka nami, right? And this is a good interpretation if you read do a precise reading of the Brisa. Diktani yefe dinar utrisit, right? Because the Brisa says a yefi dinar and a trisit. Veloktani dinar yefe utrisit, and it wouldn't say a dinar yefe and a trisit. Shma, right? It does not say dinar yefe. So what he's saying is that look at the order of the words. It says yefe dinar utrisit, okay? And it doesn't say dinar yafet. And the significance of that difference is in Hebrew is that when it says dinar yafet, right, that means a good dinar. Yafet dinar means more the equivalent of a dinar. So even though when I translated it initially, because that is the way that they understood the brace initially, right, it doesn't mean that he's going to bring, the guy isn't saying to the money changer, I'm going to bring you a good dinar. What he is saying by yefei dinar is the equivalent of a dinar and a trisis, which means that he's not paying the money changer an actual dinar and a trisis, but something that's equivalent in value. And so this actually is Rabbi Abba's explanation that the Bryce is actually discussing an exchange of these unminted coins, right, as opposed to actually doing chalifin with the coins itself. So it really, you know, so in other words, he ends up basically, Rabbi Abba, proving Ula's position by doing this very close read of the language of the Brisa. Then they give another solution, Rav Asi Amar, Liolam bitamim ubefri rotitot, right? Yeah, the case may involve payment and copper discs. Kevan de Isle, since the employer has the payment in his house, Naseka Omer Halavani Ad Sheyavo Bini O Ad Shem Sa Mavteach. It's as if he's saying, lend me until my son comes, or lend me until I find the key. And this is going to be a Mishnah that will appear later on Daf Ayin Hey, on 75A, which says that somebody can borrow, let's say, like a seah of grain to be repaid with an identical seah of grain, even if the price of a seah is higher at the time of repayment, as long as the borrower owns his own seah of grain, right? But it's more that just what he has is just inaccessible for him. So here what they're saying the case is that he has the dinar at home. It's just not accessible to him at this minute, right? And so even though it's a loan, he's basically saying, okay, I'll give you the dinar back. Then the question becomes, why is it not considered interest if he's going to actually pay back a dinar and a trisis? Because the payment's already in possession of the borrower when he took out the loan. He's allowed to actually pay the money changer a little bit extra if he had already promised that the payment was at home and there's no actual chalifin that's actually taking place. So that's another way to understand this brisa. From here, the Gemara is going to go again and challenge that you can't use a coin for chalifin. And it will continue with that onto the next Amud, which I know, Anne, is what you're going to get to. But I think it's just interesting to see the Gemara really, you know, sort of kind of can't move away from this topic, But this particular exchange with Ula is very interesting to me. It's such a close reading of the text. And I think this shows us that even particularly sometimes when we translate things into English, which is certainly how I learn, I don't learn really, I read the Hebrew text, but I often have to refer to a translation in English. If you were initially to read that brisa, you know, okay, you'll mistranslate it because you'll just say, dinar, you know, you'll translate yafet dinar as what dinar yafez. But to me, what's fascinating is that the Gemara sort of assumes that initial understanding of the brisa just based on the Hebrew. And then it's only when Ula comes after this exchange and says, no, look at the brisa again. Look at the order of the words and really what it's saying. And that's where he's able to come to that conclusion that it's really not talking about chalifin. So I just love when we have examples where the Tanaim pay very close attention to the actual phrasing of a brisa or of a Mishnah.
You know, Yordana, I don't think I've ever thought about the fact that the Amoraim, whose native tongue, let's say, was Aramaic, that the Mishnah wasn't their native tongue either. Meaning, obviously, Aramaic and Hebrew are much closer than, you know, English and Hebrew, Mishnaic Hebrew. But I don't think I ever gave it any consideration that they're dealing with a text that they had to kind of work to pay attention to as well. Besides the fact that we want to be careful and precise in our understanding of Mishnah, the fact that it's also a bit of a foreign language is just a whole interesting new can of worms, I guess. I want to look on Amud Bet. We have a discussion. The Gemara delves into the opinion of Rav Nachman. We've mentioned Rav Nachman here before, and he's kind of been mentioned kind of tangentially, recognizing that he's got, you know, an important view. Let's see what he says. My Tamad Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman is the one who says, Savar lak Rabbi Yochanan. He holds like Rabbi Yochanan, who Rabbi Yochanan de'amar says, Dvar Torah ma'ot konot. Umibnei ma'amru mashicha konah gzira shema yomar lo nisrachu chitech ba'aliyah. We'll come back to the different excuses made in a moment. But Rabbi Yochanan says that according to the Torah law, meaning at that level of standard, money itself will indeed affect acquisition. Money affecting acquisition, meaning money brings about the actual purchase. In all the ways that we've been saying, money doesn't bring about the purchase. You have to pay for the thing that you acquire, but you acquire it through other means. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, or in fact, according to Rav Nachman here as well, right, at the Torah level, ma'ot konot, the money, the coins themselves, will in fact acquire the item. You pay your money and you've owned it. You come into ownership. So why then, as I read before, why did they have to talk about these other forms of formal acquisition, right, where you pull the animal or you raise the item over your head? It doesn't have to be over your head, but right, like a certain amount up off the counter, up off the ground. And so the Gemara explains, gzera, it's a decree, lest the seller, shema yomarlo, lest the seller say to the buyer, that your wheat was burned upstairs, right, in the upper story, in an attic, right? The idea being that once you've already given your money, if you now have you've already effected the acquisition and you haven't taken possession of your new stuff yet, then the concern is that somebody can pull a fast one and say your wheat was burned up in the, you know, somewhere else, and therefore they still hold on to it. Or even if they're not pulling a fast one, you then could have some damage befall your stuff that you've now paid the money for, but you haven't yet acquired, you haven't yet taken home, even though it's yours, let's say, and then you don't have any recourse because you've already taken acquisition. So the idea that the money gives you the right to take possession as opposed to actively taking possession is then helpful for the protection of the consumer. So the Gemara goes on to say that the acquisition is only going to take effect when the buyer actually does some action, right? In order to make sure that it's not just the money, right? And that's where Rav Nachman's position comes in, right? Because the whole idea was that using only money, even if it's going to work at a Torah level, it ends up being only a very unusual occurrence. And the fact is, right, it's going to be an unusual occurrence if somebody's selling their animal, let's say, for example, and you're going to swap the money, right? He's going to get the money in his hand, and then he's going to change his mind and say, no, like, don't give me money. Give me an animal instead. Give me crops instead. Whatever. We're going to trade on a different basis than actual money. Milta de shchicha gazru b'rabanan. Milta de lo shchicha lo gazru b'rabanan. We have a very important principle here that the sages only decreed things when there were really when there was really a likelihood of a need for the decree, meaning something happens enough times, it's a common enough occurrence that there's going to be a need for such a decree. Namely, we're going to make sure that there's actually a formal act of acquisition and not just the transfer of money, because it did indeed happen, right? Meaning this is the Gemara attesting to the fact that, in fact, people did, you know, end up high and dry where their money was in the hands of the seller and they did not get their stuff. Right, so that's why. So under that's like the normal across the board circumstance, and then there were certain circumstances that were, you know, rarer. In which case, you could say, well, then the sages didn't apply that decree to this case. And some of these cases here on the stuff are exactly that, the more rare case. The Gemara goes on. Reish Lakish, right? In contrast to Rabbi Yochanan, according to Reish Lakish, meaning. If we read that Mishnah, if you go back and read the Mishnah, according to Reish Lakish, who disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan, the Amar Meshicha Mufureshet Min HaTorah, that really you need that Meshicha, that act of pulling the animal, you need that from a Torah level, not just the exchange of coins. Hanicha Isaver LaKerev Sheshet, Mitaris LaKerev Sheshet. Kerev Sheshet. So if Reish Lakish says you need to be able to physically move the movable property, right, and that money itself won't acquire movable property, so then you're not gonna. There's no distinction between these things that happen often or don't, and when there would be a decree, because the idea is that the decree isn't relevant in that same way. So then, what is, you know, Rav Sheshet is the one who said that the produce itself will affect the exchange, it will bring about the exchange. So if Reish Lakish can explain the Mishnah to align with Rav Sheshet, then Reish Lakish says is in good standing, you know, as a voice against Rabbi Yochanan. Ella, e saver like Rav Nachman. But if you say that Reish Lakish holds like Rav Nachman, the amar piri lo avdi chalipin umat be'a lo kani, you want to say that the produce doesn't bring about the exchange and the coin doesn't bring about the change of ownership, right? Then how is he going to explain, how is Reish Lakish going to explain the Mishnah? So the Gemara answers, heichi mitarisla, al karchacha, kerav sheshit mitarisla. At the end of the day, you just have to say that Reish Lakish explains the Mishnah in accord with the opinion of Rav Sheshit, right? Again, Rav Sheshet, who says that the produce does in fact bring about the exchange. Okay, one small little bit. Tanan kol ha-metaltlin konin ze'etze. There's the Mishnah goes on, right, to say that you can exchange movable property where each acquires the property from the other. Va'amar Reish Lakish va'afilu kis male ma'ot b'kis male ma'ot. You could, according to Reish Lakish, you could even just exchange, you know, a pouch of coins for another pouch of coins, and that would work as an exchange, as a purchase. Meaning, whether you call it an exchange or you call it a purchase, either way, it's going to take effect.
That's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.